Hello, and welcome to That's Theatre Darling, a podcast that shouts from the rooftops about the skill, creativity, and passion of all of the people who make theatre happen. My name is Amy, and I am thrilled to have you here. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Today, I am very excited to introduce to you an exceptionally talented lighting designer. She was actually a recommended guest if you cast your mind back to episode 2 with Sarah Barnes. She is an absolute delight to work with. It is the wonderful Zoe Spur. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, hello. Nice to see you. Thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast.
Oh, very welcome. It's very exciting.
It is very exciting. You are actually my first lighting designer on here, so that is exciting.
Hi.
Yes.
Good. Very nice.
The first one. So we were both at Central together, and then we worked at the Hampstead together, didn't we, on the Phlebotomist?
Downstairs, yep. Yep, we did.
Which, I mean, for me was quite a tricky job, but it was an excellent show and story, and I think it went down a storm with audiences, didn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, yeah, it was a nightmare for you. I remember just thinking, how are you still going?
I mean, I wasn't. That was the thing.
Yeah, no. It was tough. It's always tough for everyone, isn't it? But yeah. They crammed so much into a very small space of time.
Yeah.
But you just had so much to do. It was the prop show, wasn't it?
It was the prop show and the costume show.
And
it
was food. Just was it food yeah, show as well? Food,
well, just mess. Like messy tomatoes and soil and yeah. Yeah. Just everything and one person, which is just always a joy.
And I remember you operating from that tiny little box, like floating in the corner and your head poking over in previews and trying to catch your eye for things.
Yeah, God. Yeah. I think the craziest thing about that show was that because there were so many props and costume, it was like I was trying to concentrate on getting the cues in the book and all that kind of stuff. And then it was like, we need to reset. And I was like, oh, that's me again. That's me. Jump ready out go. And go and reset and then jump back in again, right where we're going from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
I do
just
love
a
that
bit
about
mental.
A studio where you're so close to the stage, you're practically on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Off you go.
Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, I would love to get started by asking you what your very first memory was of being in a theatre. What can you tell me about it?
So I have a really clear memory of we must have gone with school. I reckon I was about 6 or 7. And I think it was to the I grew up in Birmingham. I think it was to the old Rep Theatre in Birmingham. Or it might have been the Alex. And we went to go and see, I think it was The Witches. It was definitely a Roald Dahl play. And it was a school performance. And we'd all been asked to make a picture of, I think it was a mouse turning into a boy or something. So you did it by, I think, folding over paper. And then you opened out the paper and the card and it revealed another drawing.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, so we were all sat in the auditorium. We'd all given our drawings in, and I remember that I won, and I remember standing up, they kind of called my name out, and I just remember being overjoyed that my picture won.
Yeah.
And then I don't really remember what happened. I don't think I went on stage. I don't think I got anything. I just remember that moment of someone on stage
just
calling my name out. Yeah. So I think that was my first memory of theatre. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of
such joy.
Yeah, we always used to. I was lucky. My grandparents used to take us to a concert every year at Symphony Hall. That was a presentation of some of the ballets of the upcoming season that Birmingham Royal Ballet were doing, and it was presented by Alan Titchmarsh. And it was just such a lovely night. So you had the full orchestra on stage at the Symphony Hall, and then you had the dancers on the kind of downstage strip. And we went every year, and it was just the best night. So I think that was started around when I was about maybe 8 as well. I remember really clearly watching
that's
as well.
What a great experience.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
So do you, when you were a child, did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be, a few things. I wanted to be an interior designer as I was a bit older. But then before that, I don't remember saying, oh, I want to be this from the age of 3. I don't remember that. I always did ballet and tap and things and saw myself as a prima ballerina and dancing forever. So I'd say, yeah, maybe a dancer. And then later on, more an interior designer. And did a placement in interior design and kind of pursued that for a little bit and loved it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear like how you got from wanting to be an interior designer to where you are now. Obviously, it's quite...
quite different, though, I guess, you know, it's still, you know, creating beauty in spaces. But could you give me a bit of a kind of highlights reel of your journey from, yeah, from interior design to lighting design?
Yeah, so I was at, when I did the interior design placement, I would have been about 15, 16, so kind of end of secondary school. And then I went to college to study drama, English literature, which was called the drama package at Stratford-upon-Avon College.
Okay.
And then I did art as well, because I loved art.
Yeah.
And then I did law, because the classes were the same as my boyfriend's schedule. So we then did law together. And I ended up being really good at law. I got full marks in my law exam, which I was amazed about.
Great. Yeah.
So that was, you know, a stroke of luck. I went to study drama because I'd always danced and I thought I'd love to have some acting skills to go with my dancing.
Mm.
And I originally applied for the musical theatre course, which is a kind of 2-year BTEC, I think, more so than A-levels. And then got onto the course. And I remember I did a Singing in the Rain tap and song routine, got in. And I can't sing, so I don't know what they were what they were playing at. And then I can't remember how long it was before I actually went, but I just had a change of heart and just changed to A levels instead and did the drama package and started at Stratford College. And I think it was about the second or third week we did a health and safety workshop in the theatre. But I remember the technician Tim, who worked within the theatre at the college, had prepared the whole space. It was a big black box studio, just big truss that sat, you know, quite high up in the space. And the whole place was covered in, it was like a disco. He'd made it like a disco. He put a mirror ball up, loads of music, loads of smoke. It was just really cool. And that was our first entrance into the theatre at the college. And I love that he made that much effort for us and wanted to entice us with the wonders of what how a studio can be transformed, because we'd all seen it in its, you know, working light, you know, old black walls. We'd all seen that. And then suddenly to see it transformed was really powerful. And that week, just I just loved it. We all had to make a scene from The Tempest and design the lights and design the sound. And I just couldn't get enough for that week. I just loved it. And I loved finding artwork that reflected the images I was trying to make work on stage. So the art and the drama went really well together, then with the English literature side of things. So all three connected really well. And then after that, when we started doing acting bits and bobs in our drama lessons and talking about theatre, my teacher just noticed that I was really interested in everything off stage and also just what it all looked like rather than what an actor does.
Yeah.
So she encouraged me to go down that path of lighting and sound for my exams, which I was more than happy to do. And then she introduced me to Central School of Speech and Drama when I wasn't sure what to do about uni. So that was how it all plodded along, really. I did a bit of lighting and sound for the for our practical exams, but that was only one a year. So I was only there for 2 years. So that was only two shows that I'd lit, essentially, while at college. Got into Central and then went from there.
And you were on the lighting design course, weren't you?
Yeah, I did lighting design. Yeah, and I think I always preferred lighting over sound. I feel like Techie Tim always did the sound bit. And I just kind of flew with the lighting and just preferred that. There's a really embarrassing picture of me I don't know if it's still there, in the Stratford College, what would it be called, prospectus? Is that what they send out to students? That it's just me in head to toe blacks. But I've got massive white pants on for some reason that are poking up out of the top of my trousers. And I'm stood at this old Strand lighting desk looking so happy to be there. And I just think, yeah, brilliant picture. Why am I wearing massive white pants?
Maybe it was the style of the season.
What was happening? It's because we're so tired. You just have to throw anything on for tech.
Yes, correct.
Can't be held responsible. And I loved it. And I don't think they'd had a student there that had gone down. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, a friend of mine who works in the industry, Vic Brennan, who's a lighting programmer, she went to Stratford College and then ended up working at the RSC for a long old time. So, I think they had had previous students who'd studied technical theatre rather than, you know, straight up acting.
But
they really encouraged me and they were brilliant. And the drama teacher knew just enough to push me in the right direction and to the right shows and to see things and to explore and how to analyse theatre. And that was just part of the drama A level. That was nothing to take lighting and sound out of it. It was just, how do you analyse a piece of theatre?
Yeah. I love hearing stories about how kind of teachers are, like, recognise certain things in their students and kind of help them and mould them and push them in certain ways. I think that's just, credit to teachers doing that is just brilliant.
There was an experience actually while I was at college. My art teacher, her husband is Vince Herbert, who's head of lighting at the RSC Theatre. And at the time, I was like, oh my God, Rose's, you know, my art teacher, her husband works at the theatre. Didn't know what a big deal it was, but I went, oh, how exciting. And he showed me around and I was one of the last people to stand on the stages there before they got refurbished. I think it was about 2008. So he gave me a tour of the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, the Swan Theatre, the Courtyard Theatre. And it's those experiences that the teacher went an extra mile to give you that experience and know how much it would mean to you. And it's just something I've remembered all those years on, because you know, because you love it so much and you don't get the opportunity to see behind the scenes that much when you're 18, you know, when you're 16, 17, 18.
And so when you left Central, have you freelanced since?
Yes. Always been freelance. I think it's just a given that if you want to be a lighting designer, you go freelance. And I was really, I knew I wanted to be a lighting designer, but I also knew that there was a path to there, to get there. I didn't leave Central and say I'm a lighting designer. Only recently have I said that and have put that as my job title.
Yeah.
Because you're an assistant, you're an associate, you're a relighter, which is when you tour with a show and you make the show look the same at every venue with the lighting, and you work with the lighting designer to recreate that. Production electrician, you work as tech crew for things, you might be doing corporate work with white light for events. There's all sorts that I ended up doing, but I was very lucky because Central kept me in touch with a lot of great people. So there was Ben Baratta, who was the who worked on, I think he worked on the Date course for a while, but then he also had a company called Outbox, which is a brilliant theatre company. And he would always reach out and I lit their shows for about 5 years. So as well as doing all of the other, you know, all the other roles that exist within lighting, I was also lighting shows at the same time at small scale, some slightly bigger, then being on West End shows, but being an assistant or just shadowing. So I was seeing all the different scales of shows right from leaving Central to now. So I think freelancing was a great way to form my career as a lighting designer.
Yeah, and sort of gather those experiences from all those different roles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And sort of feed that into your practice.
Yeah, I don't know how I would have done it otherwise. You know, there's younger designers who leave college. I think because we've got such a wealth of theatre, especially in London, you can leave and be at fringe level and design and email directors and contact people and network and get your name out there and be a lighting designer. You have to have the other skills as well about how to rig a light, how to program a lighting desk. But I think the experiences right from very small scale to large scale and working with very experienced lighting designers, they show you how to be a lighting designer more than anything. So it's your... Yeah. It's your practice and it's also seeing a process start to finish. And I think any theatre can be scaled up or down and you see that process and it's just got a few extra people and a few extra cogs and a few extra steps to that process. But essentially the start and the end point's the same. It's just how you get there. So
yeah.
I really enjoy working with more experienced lighting designers, and I'd still go, like I'd go now, I'd go, and I was an associate a couple of years ago on a big opera to try and, because I'd never worked on opera and really wanted to. And the opportunity came up. The director, who was also a lighting designer, and he was lighting designing and directing, he wanted an associate lighting designer to essentially look after the lighting with alongside him. So it was a perfect job. So I learned all about opera schedules and, you know, just, well, opera in general. They have a lot of new words that I hadn't heard
before. It's a very
different
world, isn't it? Yeah.
What is a pre-generale? Thank you. What is that?
What
dress
is that?
Dress rehearsal.
Ah, great.
Dress rehearsal. Stage piano, stage orchestra. who's in charge, you know, who's the boss on this session, all those different things. So I think you can never stop learning, and you can, and there's a big generation of lighting designers, and then there's another generation before them, and they will always, they made lighting design as well. I've been doing some, I'm part of the Association of Lighting Designers, and I've been, I'm on the exec committee, and I've been, we're interviewing lighting designers for a book that they're hopefully releasing soon.
Nice.
And I just leapt at the chance to talk to, you know, some of the oldies. I hope they don't listen. Don't call me old. there was Andrew Bridge, who lit The Phantom of the Opera, and he invented the birdie. We all know, like, a little bit, he invented it. And he has That's all these amazing. Stories about how lighting moved from the, you know, the old, they're not even lighting desks. They're the big, I want to say faders. They're not faders. What's the word I'm looking for? You essentially, like, levers on the wall that control lighting. And big preset desks, you know, he came from those days, and he carved the role of lighting designer for theatre, you know. So there's so much we can learn off people. I couldn't imagine leaving Central and just being me and just doing my own lighting design. You've got to get out and see everything, see what other people are doing.
Yeah, you've got to soak it all up and learn. And yeah, absolutely. And so I'd love to hear about a kind of day in the life of a lighting designer. Could you give me an idea of what that is for the sort of different parts of the process, as it were?
Yeah, so it can be anything from having creative meetings with a director to, it depends what part of the process you're at, really. I mean, you get the job, you might have a meeting with the director, read the script, check that you're right for the show. It's really important for me to be right for the show. There was a script I read. There's been a few scripts where I'm quite squeamish and I've gone, I'd pass out with that. So
not for
thank
me,
you, but no, thank you. It depends where you are in the process. But let's say I'm in tech. So we normally do a kind of 10 to 10 day or 9 to 10 day and get to the theatre. You'll either leap straight into a tech session. Bunny Christie said, who's a set designer, you know, you sometimes don't even have time to open your notepad because you're just straight into tech. Right, lights off, let's go. And you'll just, you sit there all day and you create the lighting for the show, usually with a programmer. You've got your production electrician there. You might have an assistant. And you build the lighting for the show. You generally work, you know, from start to finish through the show. Sometimes you might hop about if you've got fight calls or children, or we had rain in a show, which was an absolute nightmare, so we had to have rain rehearsals. So it could be anything really. I'd say a lot of it's about talking with the director and set designer and sound designer, especially. I find myself really, me and a sound designer, if I'm not sat next to them in tech, I find it very bizarre because we just constantly talk to create that language and to make sure that the visual and the oral, they you know, they meet. Lots of different things in the day of a life, but generally a lot of running around, a lot of coffee and a pint of wine at the end of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
You did.
So what would you say is your favorite thing about being a lighting designer? Like, what do you look forward to in a day with excitement?
I think it's the people, first of all, because no matter what the show is, it's the people that make it. The show could be anything, but if you can have a laugh and support each other, and especially emotionally support each other. I did Wuthering Heights this time last year, so January, February 2020, just before it all kicked off. And it was very emotional, and the way that the team, you know, the whole company supported each other was just, it was just another level of supporting and asking if people are okay and recognizing that we were doing something really emotional. So I think the people that was just on a show, the network of lighting people is also huge. So it might be going to the Coach and Horses on they do ALD socials. I think they're once a month normally. Might be going to the Coach and Horses on a Friday night and just meeting everyone and either talking about lights. I sometimes ban talking about lights because I'll, you know, I've talked about lights
all day.
Let's talk about something else, please. So I think it's the people on the job, and for me, selfishly, it's about being creative. I can be creative every day, and I have a lot of control over how the audience can see how we tell the story on stage visually. Obviously, with everyone else, you collaborate as a team to create that. But it's something that you can't always express with words. You just have to show people. You have to show the director. Yeah. You have to people experience it in a different way. You can't just play. You know, it's like with sound. You can play someone a score. You can play them a sound cue before you get to the theatre. But it's always waiting with anticipation of, is this going to work in the theatre? I've seen it on paper on a lighting plan for months, and what's it going to look like?
Yeah.
So that moment of just pressing go on a cue and something amazing happening is, I think, is another thing I love about what I do.
Yeah, I love that too, to be honest. Mm. I love the moment of coming into the tech and sort of being able to see the lighting and kind of see how much that can change the world and add to the world that you've sort of been creating for weeks and months, you know.
Yeah,
it's especially so exciting.
You lot. Yeah, when you're all sat in the rehearsal room, because quite often you have your QLab file, don't you? So you have your sound cues and you sometimes have sets, so you can have bits of set around, so you or costume, so you roughly know where you're going with that. But I think the lighting is the cherry on the cake, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It just brings it to life.
Yeah.
That's why we need lighting designers.
And it can just change everything so much.
Yeah, it really can. It really can. It's got so much power. And that's all in my head until we get into tech.
Which is just a complete mystery to me.
I'm constantly finding ways of trying to communicate what on earth I'm talking about. Sometimes it's as easy as it's a big red light for this moment. And that's a very clear way. I quite often do scene-by-scene breakdowns for directors to try and establish a language throughout the piece and for them to understand what I'm trying to achieve. And if anything leaps out at them, they can ask me about it or change it or even sometimes respond in rehearsals to what I might be doing or I can offer in rehearsals. So, but it is difficult until you see it. You don't know. It's just in my head until I press go.
Yeah, and that must, you know, that's such a skill to have, to be able to translate that to somebody else, to kind of say, you know, this is what I'm imagining in my head for the lighting, and translating that to somebody else. That's such a skill to be able to explain it without being able to show it until you're in the theatre.
I really try. I'm constantly finding ways to be better at it. And I've also found that since being a full-time lighting designer, you work in numbers all the time, because you work in every light has a channel number. So you have potentially hundreds of different numbers. Every light has a gel color if it's a generic fixture, or you have moving lights. You have all your cue numbers. You're just a sea of numbers.
Yeah.
And people laugh at me because they go, so you sound like an alien. What are you talking about? Because when I'm talking to the programmer, you just form this language. It is a shorthand that you speak to just whip through tech as quickly as possible, in as few words as possible. Because imagine talking from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. I'm sick of the sound of my voice. That's why you need a pint of wine. I'm sick of the sound of my voice and everyone else's. I mean, poor you. If a DSM has to keep the lighting cans ring on, I apologize, because it's just, you know, just numbers.
I mean, yeah, I think, to be honest, like for me, I have sort of created my own skill of adopted a skill of just being able to kind of zone it out while also being aware of it. Do you know what I mean? Like I can hear it, and I can kind of, if it is important to me, I can filter it in, but otherwise I can just kind of box it off and just have it on, but just not really listen to it.
If I often find that you guys pipe up if the words, let's delete that cue. Is that deleted? What's deleted?
The panic.
What is that?
What have I missed?
Have you told me already? Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. LXQ 4.25. I don't have a 4.25.
Go with it.
Don't worry,
anyway.
It's a follow on. Okay, fine.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. Secret language.
And so then turning that all on its head, because I like hearing about the challenges too, what would you say is your least favourite element of your job? Like, what would you dread in a day or in the process?
Every show I do, the second preview is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told off before for saying this because they go, Zoe, you're cursing it. You're cursing us. I go, fine. Well, let's go. Bring on second preview.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. Everyone's knackered. It's normally on a Saturday. So you've had a Monday through, you know, Thursday tech week and then Friday first preview. Everyone's on adrenaline.
Yeah.
And then you do Saturday second preview. Everyone's excited about a day off.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're knackered. You've tried a load of stuff that you probably was a bit overambitious. It all goes wrong in the second preview. You haven't teched it properly. I've forgotten to tell you about a queue that I've deleted. So we're now a queue behind. You know, second, I hate second preview. So that's probably across the board. I'd rather be in the pub for second preview. And then I think the other least favourite thing, I'd say that we've all got a little bit competitive, I would say, within the industry and jobs and who's doing what. And I think that can sometimes be a little bit unhealthy. And I think that Corona has actually hopefully got rid of a bit of that, because I think people have realised that we have a brilliant network of humans that we can rely on and work with and bounce design ideas off and talk together and support each other. And I think I've always been a big supporter of that, and to keep in touch with people and to make sure that the next generation of lighting designers can come through and can feel like we're open to talk and that we'll listen and give them advice. So I just hope that people don't find the industry scary. There's a few students that speak to me and sometimes they feel like it's a bit of an unbreakable world.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is. I think we need to open the doors. We need to fling the patio doors open and let everyone in and help as much as possible and don't leave anyone exposed. Don't put anyone in a job before they're ready. Support them through those jobs. So I'd say, that's what I didn't like about the industry, and I'm really hoping it will change. I'm really hoping this will flip it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to move on now to the quickfire questions section. These questions are designed for answers in the moment, so I haven't shown them to you beforehand, but I promise they're not daunting. So if you're up for it, I will dive in with my first question.
Yeah, I'm now just trying to remember 15 years of theatre.
On the spot, without knowing what I'm going to ask.
On the spot, I forgot what I did yesterday. So go.
Okay, here we go. What is the weirdest thing that you've been a part of creating on stage? A moment where you've stood back and thought, this is bonkers.
I mean, I think we're quite conditioned to accept the weird and wonderful, which is part of what I love. But I think the weirdest, when I just had to just suddenly stop and go, oh, this isn't what, was when I had to try and find glowing balls for a show, which was meant to be like a plastic ball that lit up that you could click on. And the idea was that it was a kind of a bottle on fire that someone was throwing in a riot. So the idea was that it would be lit, throw, off. So I just really innocently typed glowing balls into Google and you can imagine what came up. So that was a moment of, obviously, this is weird, isn't it? Look at this.
Brilliant. Very good. Could you tell me three lesser known facts or insights about your job, things that people typically might not know about?
What might they not know about? I would say that I feel that as an industry, it's not recognised how much goes on outside of a rehearsal room that a lighting designer does, whether it's organising the team, drawing the lighting plan, cue sheets. There's so much that we can do off-site and out of sight, and I think that there needs to be more recognition for that. What else do we do that people might not know about? I think we're part of the creative process. I feel that people don't always understand that a lighter designer can have a huge input into the creative process by being a collaborator.
Yeah, absolutely.
With everybody. What else do we do? This might sound really silly, but we work in the dark So if you're doing, especially if you're doing an outdoor production, you could, it's very antisocial because you have to work at night. And I think that that's quite often forgotten about, or you need to turn the lights off to work. Sorry, it's annoying. but it's such a, I mean, I love it. It's such a brilliant job. And I think that there are so many different parts to the job, depending on what show you're doing. Start to finish, I like to adapt my process to each show and make sure that I'm looking after the show properly and taking good care of it. And I guess another thing that people, you know, people always say, oh, you just press the button or whatever. it's a lot more than that.
Not as simple as that.
No, it is not.
It's a little bit more to it.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. What would you say is your work superpower? Like, what are you really great at?
Apart from being able to consume a lot of gin in a short space of time, I would say patience. Mm-hmm. I'm always told that I'm very patient.
Yeah.
And also people, especially when I was touring, people used to love my Brummie accent because they said that I was automatically a friend, which I thought was such a nice thing to say.
Yeah.
Because you don't hear a lot of Brummie accents in theatre, I don't think. So immediately it's a conversation point. Where are you from? I can't quite figure your accent out. And I think that, yeah, I'd say, yeah, if it was those things, it would be patience and hopefully being approachable and being a friend.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. If you were given free rein with no repercussion or response, what single thing would you like to say to the following people? For instance, if I was given director, I would say, I'm not saying that we need to take lunch because I want a break, it's because everybody has to take a break.
Yeah.
So it can be a positive or a negative thing that you'd say to these people. It's up to you.
Yeah.
So the first person I'm going to give you is stage manager.
What would I say to a stage manager? I'm not chatting, I promise, I'm working.
Yeah.
Because you're often asked, and of course it's the stage manager's job to keep you on track. But with the expansion of moving lights and huge lighting rigs squeezed into a very small amount of tech time. Mm. And also, as we said earlier, the lighting design is a new element that you've had your actors, you've had your sound, you've had all of this, that and the other. This is my shot to get it right.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that lights are flashing about and going crazy.
Yeah.
So to stand there and go, oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Really? I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm trying. I'm really trying. Yeah. I'm not just chatting. But then occasionally there is a time when you're just a bit knackered and you are having a chat.
And you are just chatting.
Because you need redirect. That. You do need that. You really need that. And it's good to, you know, we always have some good crack as well. So we're like,
absolutely.
Yeah, come to our ring. Have a chat, join us on the dark side.
Okay, next person is actor.
Stand in the right place, please.
I sort of had a feeling you were going to say that. Stay in that place.
Just stand in the right place. Do you know what? Some are brilliant at it. Some are not. And actually, can I take that back? Can I take back stand in the right place? And can I have instead, you don't know what you look like on stage. Just stop telling me.
Yes. Yeah.
Am I lit? I'm not lit enough. Well, you are.
I can see you.
You're really bright. Yes. The brightest thing on stage. But do you know what? At the same time, it's very exposing. I don't want to sound like an ass.
Yeah.
It's very exposing for actors to stand on stage and to not know what they look like. And I've had sessions before where I have stood on stage in the lighting cues and walked the lighting cues for the actors to see. Whether it's just, look how great you look in this cue. It's amazing. Yeah. Or don't stand in this particular part of stage because it's a slightly weaker spot.
Yeah.
You know, this is your safe space to travel in and to exist in. So use that rather than standing. A lot of time, especially if you're right up against the proscenium, that's just a bit of a weaker spot to stand because you can't get as many angles in. Whereas if you're a bit further away, you can get all sorts of nice side lights and angles and what have you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Next person is director.
I would say to a director, that's a preview note.
Yeah.
And actually another one of my superpowers actually might be getting to the end of tech, get to the end of the show in tech.
Yes.
Because
very good. Yeah.
I want dress rehearsals. I don't want to not have a dress rehearsal. I want the extra dress rehearsal. I want the photos in the dress rehearsal to look nice. I want to make sure that the DSM is happy. That is my main thing, is does the DSM have their cues in the book?
Yeah.
Are they clear? We need to see those holes before sending you completely exposed into a preview.
Yeah, because I can tell you now,
things to do.
Not doing a dress rehearsal is the most terrifying thing ever.
Yeah, and it's not fair. It's not fair. And I think that, yeah, getting to the end of the show in tech, it is my number one priority. And yeah. There was a show, actually, I'm not even, yeah, there was a show where we spent a lot of time on a small opening bit and of Act Two that literally could have gone from the show and we could have added it in later. And we spent an entire tech session on this, and then we didn't have any time to tech the end.
Which is awful.
And you know, you stage managers have meticulously worked out step by step of tech, where we need to be in the play by 11 o'clock, where we need to be by the end of the day. And you push us to get there. And thank you. And it's good to have that scheduled in front of us to know where we need to be. But it's important that we do that. And to, as you say, to get breaks in, we have to get breaks in. I'm a big fan of a break. I'm penned down at 1 o'clock. I've run. I'm off for an hour. I think it's really important to have that space. I think it's, get to the end of tech. And yeah, that's a preview note. So let's save it for our previews. Let's plan our previews. Let's work our time efficiently in previews. With the team that we've got, we're all here for you, and we can add that in preview. Let's just get the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely on board with that. Artistic director.
Give your notes to the director. Don't give them to me.
Yes.
There's very specific reasons why a director has given me a note or given the show a note. And I think I love it when an artistic director of a venue is very involved with the show. Mm. Like when I was at the Royal Exchange, so Bryony directed Wuthering Heights, but then Roy, who they're joint artistic directors, but then Roy was just present enough to feel like he was supporting us and supporting Bryony and had some really valuable feedback for the production as a team, and a lot of congratulations and a lot of lovely things to say. But also you go through the director and you time your notes at the right time. I've had artistic directors give directors notes just before we've got into our cue for preset, and I've had directors on the phone going, oh my god, Zoe, they've said this scene's too dark or this cue doesn't work, can we change, you know, they panic because the artistic director has a lot of clout and is often a very respected person and has had a lot of experience. So their word means a lot. The best artistic directors are the ones that give you space throughout previews to grow your piece in that way, and to just let you do your job, and to know that there's a groundwork that has to go in before reaching the bigger heights. And it's also good to know if you're going completely wrong, if you're going in the wrong direction, the artistic director went, oh no, I can see this massive hole, I've just watched a dress. Let's work on that. But it needs to go through the director, because the director is the one that pulls us all together. There's no point coming to me with your notes without telling the director.
No, because they might be conflicting. They might be something completely opposite to what the director wants.
So I'd say, always go through the director.
And then the final one is sound designer.
Sound designers. It's a tricky one, that, because I have a very close relationship with a few sound designers where we kind of just become one, you know, when we just find that language of working and bounce off each other so clearly. Do you know what? I'm going to say, please don't ask for quiet time during my lighting focus session.
Yes. Yeah.
I had a bang call. Alex Faye Braithwaite, where is she? She was like, sorry, can we have a band call? Oh, God, nightmare. And the band was like, here, right next to me, when we were at our lighting desk, because it's in the round at the Royal Exchange.
Yeah.
And we had the band right next to the tech position for lighting. So nightmare. It was already in our ears throughout tech. And they needed the time, of course, but trying to shout over them to
split the time
their guitars and their drums and all this, that, and the other. No,
madness.
No thanks.
Okay, next question. What is your biggest theatre faux pas or confession?
Like something that I do that I shouldn't, kind of thing.
Something that you do that you shouldn't, or that you've done that you shouldn't, or yeah, something, a confession.
Oh, God, what have I done? what have I done? I'm a bit of a goody. I'm a bit of a goody-goody. I'm really rubbish at watching TV, films, stuff like that. I never remember people's names or who directed it or who did what. I just enjoy the art of it and kind of move on. So if you say, have you seen this film? The answer is probably not.
Yeah.
So if I'm working with actors that might be famous, I have no idea unless someone tells me.
I think sometimes that's a good thing.
It's great.
Because then you just treat them all the same and it's all fine.
Yeah, I did a show with an actor and they were trying to get me on Twitter. And I was saying, okay, fine. But if I get Twitter, will you follow me? He said, yeah, of course I will. And then he followed me. And again, famous actor. And he had something like 30,000 followers. How do you have so many followers? You know, so
I'm really famous.
Yeah, I can sometimes be a bit daft about stuff like that. Yeah,
I think that's great. I think ignorance is bliss in that kind of scenario. Yeah. I think everyone should be treated the same, no matter how famous they are.
Exactly. I think it's just that you're expected to know, or you're expected to give a certain, you know, there's a certain air of conversation or whatever around that person.
Yeah.
And there you are.
And so that brings us to the end of quickfire questions. So I would love to talk to you now about kind of theatre more generally. So I would like to know what you feel are the benefits of working in a creative industry, both for you personally and for others as well.
I, being a creative person, I couldn't not do it. I love my job, and I have been, every time I do a show, I consider myself lucky. I wake up every day and think, I sometimes have to very consciously say or think, I'm very lucky to do what I do. Because the people I work with, the conversations, the ideas, the exploration of subjects that I knew nothing about would never have come to me if it wasn't for theatre or opera or film, whatever it is you're working in. And it's very powerful. It gives you a huge amount to talk about in life. It builds you as a person. It allows you to build opinions and form very measured opinions of something. Because I meet a new team of people every month, it's fascinating to see all these different, whether it's just talk about the news, it's all these different people that you're talking to that can then inform your opinion and therefore kind of start shaping you more as a person. And you get to experience different, there's different sides of life, the different cities, parts of the world. You know, theatre and the creative work can take you anywhere, and you never know what's next. I think it's something that, as a creative person, I have to be creative. There's people who work in theatre who aren't creative, who are their brain works in a different way, yet have extremely valuable input into creative decisions, whether it's through just having parameters or technical information. I mean, the way that lighting desks work blows my mind.
Mystery.
Programmers
Mystery.
Are phenomenal in the way that they know
and
that.
So
automation.
Fast.
All of the, you know, metalwork, but set builders, everyone essentially has to have that element of creativity to do their job. And we talk a lot about the word creative team, especially I'm a member of Equity and within the ALD, because saying the word creative team imply that other people on the production are not creative. Yeah. And I think that isn't true. Everyone has to enjoy creativity and offer something to the project. And collaborate. Everyone wants to work together. You're not a one-man band. So use the team around you. And I hope people aren't snobby about, a stage manager can't have an idea. I've seen it, sadly. I have seen that. And I think I think there's also a time and a place to have for anybody to have an idea. I would never interrupt a director in the middle of one train of thought.
Oh no.
Never. Yeah. Whoever you are, you don't do that. Nope. So it's about knowing the protocols around who to talk to, who the team are, who's the head of department, as long as you go around things the right way, I think everyone's very entitled to feed into the creative process and should feed into it. You know, it shouldn't just be the heads of the core creative team as they're known. It should be everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I really agree. How do you feel the industry could be better at taking care of the mental health of theatre professionals?
I think harping back to Wuthering Heights again, because this was when at the end of a very intense rehearsal of where we did the scene where Kathy, spoiler alert, dies. She, they did this incredible raw sequence, and I'm getting goosebumps now just thinking about it. And it was just in the rehearsal space. And Kathy was just stood in the middle of the stage, screaming and shouting and crying out for Heathcliff and wanting him to come back to her. And he was running around the space, and you could feel the wind coming off him as he was running around, and you could see like the tears coming down her face. And it makes me emotional just thinking about it. But it finished, and Kathy walked up this kind of steel deck structure in the rehearsal room, and just stood at the top and just dropped a feather down. And we just stopped, and the musicians finished playing, and Bryony just paused and just said, is everybody okay? Because all of us were sat there trying to hold it together when in fact we just watched this incredibly powerful scene in rehearsal. And I think that was a real moment of the director's responsibility to look after people in the room. And she really felt that and cocooned us in such a lovely way. But then who looks after them? But if they offer it, they then hopefully receive it from us as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's on all of us to keep checking in. And I think that I said before, I'm a massive fan of breaks. You've got to go on a break. Everyone has to have a break. If someone says to me, tech has to finish at 4:30, it's my job to get us where we need to be for 4:30, so that especially stage managers can do their reset, have a break.
Yeah.
Yes, I know the show isn't till 8 o'clock. Yes, I know that's 3.5 hours away. I know that we could do a bit more work on this scene, but let's do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let's have that break. We need to leave the space, otherwise you start resenting it. So I think that the glamorization of you know, working long hours and not having breaks and not stopping and coffee at the desk and bring me a sandwich at the desk, it's really unhealthy. And I think that if breaks and generally breaks and schedules are really enforced. I do a lot of subsidized and regional theatre, and they are very good. I would say more commercial theatre can sometimes be, it can be a bit tougher to enforce that, because of how the teams are. They're not, you know, everyone's freelance, they don't know each other, they don't know the building, whatever. It's just a different ball game. But I will always enforce breaks. And I think on the other side of mental health is getting paid properly for things, you know. There's a lot that people are putting in, you know, whether it's the equity safe space statement, which I think is a brilliant thing to say. But then if you're being asked to work overtime or extra hours or extra days that you're not getting paid for, especially as a lighting designer, I work on a fee basis. So when I say, yes, I'll take that fee, I agree to a certain schedule. But then that, in a way, yes, you do buy me for those days. But I was, you know, I was doing a job, I was doing 9 a.m. till midnight on a job for 3-4 days. It's a huge amount of time. And I really wanted to, but there was a pressure of, there's quite often not enough people to do the work.
Yeah.
And the process can be slow, and you should have extra people or extra stage management, extra technical staff, whatever it is, so that the freelance team don't have to kill themselves trying to get the show on. You know, so I think that paying people better and recognizing extra days or extra time or extending the schedule could do a lot, especially for any parents out there, parents who need to put their kids to bed or have other commitments. I think that will ease a lot of mental health pressure. And I think as well, the introducing assistants and associates to share workload, as well as being able to diversify the industry and bring more people in to paid assistant and associate roles, therefore starting encouraging more people into roles in theatre. It also supports the team,
yeah,
and means that you're not a one-man band as a lighting designer. I have someone that can help with paperwork and keep track of things and keep notes and all those wonderful things that these people do.
Well, and just allows you more brain space, just, you know, to be creative and to, you know, really put your all into it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's, I mean, there isn't money in theatre. There sometimes is, but I think I think that places like the Arts Council and funding for the theatre in England from the government should be more. It just should be more. Mm. I think we should restructure how Arts Council work to give more money to people rather than buildings. Yeah. And I don't know a lot about it, but I think that theatres and productions should push for bigger fees for people and bigger teams. And I know that's easier said than done, but it would help the strain on mental health big time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, big time. What do you think is the best piece of career advice that you've ever been given?
One piece of advice that I always think that then I always tell to other people is make it achievable. So, and I always say it's not the Zoe Spur show. That doesn't mean I don't care or I'm not going to do my best job. It just means that it's not about me. And sometimes a lighting, there might be a lighting cue that just blows the, you know, blows everyone away. Fantastic. I'm part of that process. But I'm certainly not going to pull all the attention and the focus and the time and all of that, you know. And I think on the make it achievable, it's if you're sending a show out on tour, they say to me it's a one day and enough. Really hard, really, really hard. It's demanding. There's no room for error. Make it achievable. Do not make it so difficult that you just will not have a show
at
7:30.
Fail.
Because I mean, the show will go on at 7:30 or it will go on at 8 o'clock, but half your lighting rig might be missing. Half of it might not be focused. The actors will be dark. It will be unsafe. It's not fair. Yeah. It's not fair to all of those people on tour. I knew the deal when I signed up for the show.
It's also not going to show, you know, it's not going to show your lighting design off to the best of its ability. You know, it's going back to your name.
Exactly. I think as a lighting designer, you need to use your voice in the team to make sure that a show can tour successfully. That you have that power.
Yeah.
So do it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How has it been for you not being able to work in theatre for, you know, a proportion of the last year?
I think, I mean, heartbreaking. The first stage was, so what was it, March the 16th, 17th, we said goodbye to a show at the Unicorn. We were meant to do a preview. We ended up doing just another dress rehearsal and we filmed it and did photos and then we went to the pub. Actually, it might have been St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, it was St. Patrick's Day because we all went for a Guinness in the pub and we just said goodbye to it and it was a very surreal moment, but we thought that we'd see it in 3 weeks. And then, so that was stage one of that was sad, but we'll be back in a month or whatever. And then one by one, my 2020 just all got cancelled. Some of it got pushed back and every time you got an email saying this show has been cancelled, this has been postponed, we don't know what's happening, we're gonna cancel it. That was stage two of the heartbreak of shows that were designed, that were realized, that were ready to go. You had your teams on them, you put all this work into them, and then you knew that you'd never get a production. That was very sad. Another very sad thing was just how hand to mouth people are in theatre. People don't have a huge amount of savings. Theatre doesn't pay a lot of money. That was really hurtful seeing how people were just being hung out to dry who had these phenomenal brains and who their workplace was closed and they couldn't go in and seemingly no one really cared about that from the government side of things. And of course, there's a pandemic going on. People are losing their lives, but people were equally losing their livelihoods at home. And they couldn't feed their families and couldn't pay their mortgage. And they've had to move back home with family, back home with their parents. You know, I think that was really, really hard. So I've just had to keep thinking it will come back. I love it so much. We will keep fighting. We will keep fighting for it to come back. And I think it was also hard not being able to feel good at something. You leave a week of tech or a press night with such elation. Look what we've made. It's tangible. It's there. We can see it and feel it and hear it. And you see tweets and show reports and reviews and feedback from your friends. It's a huge creation that you have made from nothing. And to feel like you are just doing nothing at all, you just don't feel good at anything. And I, you know, I was so worried that I'd forget how to do my job. I mean, going back into a theatre is going to be interesting for all of us. I think we'll all
from
bumble
all,
our way
yeah, from all parts,
it a bit and just be a bit emotional. But I did, I was really lucky. I did a one-off choral gig at a big warehouse in South London in, I think it was September. You know, so we had all the doors open. The warehouse was massive, socially distanced audience that all just stood up. And then we had, I think it was 12 singers and then a big string orchestra. We had a harpsichord and it was all a Handel. It was this Handel production. And they opened the production. I can't even remember what it was called. But we all just cried. The tears coming down my face. There was me and my friend Beth who came in, and we were putting some of the lighting up with some Mount View students and that I was teaching at the time, and all of us were just floored by what we were watching and how powerful it is and how much we'd missed that feel of live performance. So then that just started it all over again of this is one day we're so lucky. But now, back to nothing.
Back to it,
And there's little bits of hope. Little bits of hope came in, and then it all got cancelled at Christmas. And then again, my 2021 all shifted around because suddenly now everything's getting pushed back to May. Now it's getting pushed back to June. Now it's next year, you know.
Yeah.
So many stages of heartbreak. Throughout.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's just so hard, isn't it? It's so, like, it's just awful. There's not really, you know, another way to describe it. It's just been awful.
I know.
For everyone involved.
I don't want to do this again.
No, absolutely not. And then to bring it back to a nice thing, what, in your opinion, is the best thing about theatre?
I think that it opens people's minds to things they would either have been ignorant about or that they had never heard of before. It tells a story that is very personal to us as the theatre makers. It's our design. It's our, you know, we've fed into this process. All of us have played a part in making this production and telling this story. So it's very personal to us. And I think that having that story out there for a very specific amount of people to come and see and be enlightened by, or sit and cry together or laugh together, whatever it is, that room is a very powerful place to be, and is controlled by the theatre. You can't walk off and get a cup of tea. You know, you can't. Yeah. We've all been watching, we've been doing theatre club once a week and watching a streamed piece of theatre.
Yeah.
And the first week we said, right, we're going to turn the lights off. We're going to get a gin in a plastic cup and we're going to sit and watch Sunset Boulevard. And then about halfway through act one, my housemate leaned in and went, oh, I'd really like a gin, like whispered it to me as if we were in a theatre. And I said, fine. And I just kind of ran off and got a gin, because you do. And you can't do that in a theatre. You're in a controlled environment that we are very carefully trying to tell you how to feel, and trying to tell a story to you, and we want your attention and your generosity. And I think that's just theatre in a nutshell, is what, that's why you go, isn't it? You go to be, to find out something new and to hopefully build on who you are as a person. And again, the people, it's the, for me, it's the people in theatre. I've missed everyone so much, but then over the last few months, so many people have been in touch and we've all been chatting and texting and finding other things to just enjoy in life together, whether it's, you know, Married at First Sight, or I've taken up yoga, or whether it's knitting or plants.
Yeah.
Everyone has suddenly, I've learned a lot about people's personal lives.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I have a huge network of people that I always call friends in theatre that I wouldn't get in any, I don't think I'd get in any other job.
Yeah, completely agree. So for this part of the podcast, I have asked you to prepare a letter addressed to theatre itself.
Yes.
This is my favourite part of the podcast. No pressure, because it always brings so much varied results, so many varied results. So whenever you're ready, I would love to hear your dear theatre letter.
I'd like to say that I was in a theatre yesterday, so I'm probably, hopefully I won't cry, because I was there yesterday sucking the dust in. right, here we go. Dear theatre, to think of you sat quiet and still, dark and cold, breaks my heart. You should be filled with people and emotion and wine in plastic cups. You challenge me every time I step through your doors, and this is an addiction I haven't been able to access for many months now. I've noticed that I constantly wonder what you'll bring next and what the future holds, what I'll be lucky enough to work on and what I'll be leaving about. What? Oh, hang on, I can't read my writing. And what I'll be learning about both myself and the world. You've always brought people so much joy, and I promise we will bring you back to life, and the stage will be alight with talent, passion, and stories once more. Sit tight, get ready, stand by. Love always, Zoe. I actually wrote it. I wrote it for real. I didn't type it, so I can't read it. Lesson learned. And I drew some little hearts on it as well.
Oh, so it's so lovely to hear. Yeah, so lovely to. And it's interesting. I wrote down you use the word addiction, which I think is so true.
Yeah.
It's so addictive.
Yeah.
Just that the buzz and the adrenaline and the people. I even find the people addictive, you know, just like the type of people that we are. And it's an addiction that none of us have been able to fulfill. I don't know what the word is that I'm trying to find, but you know what I mean? Kind of, be around and
Our world is so niche. And I think if once people are desperate to be in it, I think a lot of people start as actors, they're interested in being an actor or a director, but our roles are very hidden. We're not visible. Mm. And I think we're very lucky to do what we do because they are phenomenal roles. And I think if you're a decent person, I think you really have to be a nice person to work in theatre and to just have a nice time. Why would you not be? Mm. We're making something wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Be a team, look after each other. That will keep us going.
And if you're not finding joy in it, then why are you here? We're not getting paid enough.
Exactly.
If you're not finding the joy in it, then what's the point, you know? Thank you, that was so lovely. Thank you for sharing your letter with me. And so we're now moving on to the final section, which is a new section for this series, which is called the Inspiration Station, because I love rhymes and that just made me smile. So I would love to know, who inspires you?
Who inspires you? I think as a person, I've always been inspired by one of our lecturers at Central called Tony Simpson, who was a right laugh, and he has been through and done so much work and has the best sense of humour of anyone I've ever met. And he, I think, he's such a support and he's such a, I mean, I don't chat to him a lot. We just text every now and again. But there's just something about him that I find uplifts me and it lifts the people around me to be enthusiastic about it and to love what you're doing.
Mm.
And I mean, he'll moan and groan and grumble, but he works hard.
Don't we all?
And he always wants to help people and make sure people have what they need. So I think him just as a person and following a process in theatre, or I worked with him on a couple of films, he's always learning. And I like that. I think everyone should always learn. And he encourages you to learn and tells you things and points out that he learned something new yesterday and he's going to tell me that today, you know.
Yeah.
So he's a very inspiring human.
Yeah, yeah, he sounds it. What inspires you?
What inspires me? I'm really inspired by, I think music is very inspiring. I think you can feel the way that you feel when you listen to music is very special, and that in my head, in some crazy brain of mine, translates into a visual, and that's what I like to put on stage. When I'm working, I try and think about, you try and have a catalogue of inspiration, whether it's museums or music or the walk that you went on yesterday or a place that you visited. All of it feeds back to the work that you're doing right in front of you. And it doesn't feedback all the time, you know. You can like something that's just fun and of a time, like, you know, Abigail's Party. So I think that, yeah, just being absorbing everything is a lovely way to go through life for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. Where would you say you feel the most creatively inspired?
I think actually probably in an in a seat in a preview. I think there's in terms of theatre, it's in a rehearsal space, there is nothing for me to work with.
Mm.
So it's all in, as I said earlier, it's all in my head. So I have the ideas and they're all in my head. And that's a very creatively inspiring space, because there is nothing for me to be tied down by. It is, how do I feel right now? What color should this be? How will I help this scene? How will I make this scene better? How can I? It's already brilliant. How can I add to that language? I think it was Emma Rice who, you know, said, theatres, it's a suitcase of tricks, isn't it? You need all of them. You need the lighting, you need the sound, you need the set, and all of them come together to create that world. So I think, when I'm in the rehearsal room, I can't put my lighting on stage, but I can think about it. And then when I'm sat, at a production desk, you have a million things to do. You've got your programmer that you talk to, you have stage management in one ear, DSM in another, you have director stood next to you, set designer, a sound designer throwing things at you, trying to get your attention. You know, it's a very very busy space. And when you put the desks away and I sit in the audience as a punter watching a preview, that's where you feel it. And if I quite often try and put my notepad down and just allow myself to think and feel as the audience would, and not go, that lighting cue was 3 seconds off, or, it's a bit dark over there. Of course, they're all important things to consider, but that's, you have to see the flow of the piece and you have to go start to finish. And that's where you might clock something you hadn't previously noticed. And that inspires you to bring more energy to the next text session.
Yeah.
And then outside of a theatre show I've worked on, just sitting in an audience will always spark joy and ideas and creativity and passion for what's next. So in an audience, preferably one with leg room as well, would be great. Yeah.
Can't be creatively inspired if you're squashed in.
Oh, no, getting cramp. No thanks.
What have you discovered this week that you have felt inspired by? This can be as big as you like, as small as you like.
What have I discovered this week? I met there was a homeless man in Crouch End that I met, who is trying to sell cards to raise money for himself, to try and get a hostel, or, you know, whatever he wants to do with his money. And we had such a nice chat, and I think he really inspired me to, you know, he was saying his 6 years clean of drugs. And I just think, God, you can get through anything, can't you? You really can. Yeah. People are very resilient and it's awful, but time will heal and you will move on. So it was lovely to chat to him and just, buy a card and, see that, you know, there's a lot of different people that make up the world, which I always think and believe in. So it's nice to meet those people.
Yeah, what a great answer. So we're speeding towards the end of our time together. But before I let you go, I would just like to hand over the reins to you for a moment. If there is anything else that you'd like to say, get off your chest, promote, anything really, over to you if you wish to take the floor.
I think it's what I hope to go into this new phase of theatre with is more kindness for myself, and I think an ability to talk about that will make more people do that. I was already before the pandemic, I was already being quite strict with myself about whether it was just booking a gym class or booking a night with friends. I'm lucky that I know I might be booked maybe a year in advance, therefore you roughly know what's going on, so you can plan things. And I understand it's very difficult for people to plan things, but having those weekends in the diary with family or friends or something to look forward to is really important. And I think we should all be encouraged to do that and to look after ourselves. And if you need a doctor's appointment, have it, do it. We all are so guilty of not physically looking after ourselves. Get to the dentist, get to the doctors, and make it normal within our world to do that. So I'm certainly going to encourage more of that when I'm out, and that people shouldn't feel afraid. You know, if my lighting programmer says to me, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I need to have the morning off to look after my kid or whatever, you work around it. Fine, let's talk about it. We'll of course find a solution.
Yeah,
it's so easy to do that. And I really want people to feel comfortable doing that at work, because we all work super hard and long days and don't eat right and drink too much and, you know.
Yep.
So I think, I think that bounces off the mental health question, doesn't it? That we should all be better at looking after ourselves and being open to processes, because we're all lucky as freelancers that we can bring we can share experiences. So I can go to one theatre, see how something's been done, go, this is brilliant, and introduce that idea or plant a seed at another theatre for them to perhaps do that. And or just say, oh, and this is different, but it's also brilliant.
Mm.
So I think we should all be better at sharing experiences with theatres and ways of working. And I also think we all need to encourage more students, placements, shadowing. We need to make all of that the norm. It should just be there from day one. It shouldn't be something you scrabble about with a week before tech. You know, I think it's really brilliant to have fresh minds in the room and to show people how theatre is done. And it is scary. It is big. There is a lot to it. But break it down and you'll be doing it one day. So, be in that room and just absorb and love it like we do. So I think we should all be better at inviting more people in, making it it's not an exclusive world. We need to be visible, we need to put ourselves out there and inspire the next generation to become stage management, lighting designers, sound designers, and we need to do that. It's not the theatre's job. I think as freelancers we can all do our bit to make that thing.
Definitely. Zoe, thank you so much. It's been absolutely brilliant spending this time with you and chatting about your memories and your thoughts. What a delightful way to start a day.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's so nice to talk about theatre. I missed it. I missed the most? The gossip. Gossip. I have no idea what's going on. Everyone's had a baby. Everyone's getting engaged. Yeah. People are breaking up. People are getting together. I've got no idea.
Yeah,
people need to tell me this stuff.
Nobody's going to be able to get any work done when we get back into theatres, because everyone's just going to be catching up on all the gossip.
No, it's going to be like a coffee morning, isn't it? We're going to have to set aside for chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
And chat has ended. Right, now back to work.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of That's Theatre Darling. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you fancy giving the equivalent of a round of applause, you can do this by taking a moment to leave a review, subscribe, and why not just tell all of your friends about it? See you next time.